Okay, we should be able to get some pictures up here. Yes, I hope, very soon. Nod your head when they happen. Otherwise, I'll be going, okay, this slide is... There we go, very good. All right. And, nope. I'm not able to advance it, Aaron. So... I should be able to advance it, but I'm not, so I'll just have to tell you when to advance it. And I just pushed something, and I lost my notes. That's what happens when you have choir practice right before you do a presentation rather than, what in the world just happened? Well, we're just gonna wing it. All right, no, actually, I do need those notes. It is frustrating when things like this happen. You're never supposed to do this. And somehow it's just doing weird things. Okay, Aaron, you can try. You can try and mess with that while I'm seeing what I can do. So a year ago, Pastor Mark Hatfield and I first went to southern India. He actually went a few months before I did in August, and then last March, the two of us went together, and we met a brother that had connected with Pastor Mark in the city of Hyderabad, and we worked with him and his brothers in some different churches and did some ministry training last year. But to be honest with you, in working with them, in trying to assess what their needs and their interests were, we came away with the conclusion they were more interested in American money than they were in our theology and our teaching. And so we chose to look at a different opportunity. But a man showed up at that training last year who was committed to the Reformed faith. He has a master's degree in divinity. He loves the Lord. He knows the Word, and he has a tremendous ambition for the kingdom. His name is Johann Mamidi. And so we met with Johann. Mark and I did last year, and we've communicated with him going forward. And it's been a really, really rich experience of fellowship with him. And we trust that this is something that we can do going forward for quite some time. That said, let's go to the next third slide. Yeah, that was supposed to be, this is another one of those things that don't happen. That was supposed to be a nice plane ride to Chicago O'Hare Airport, where I started out. And then I flew across the world to Delhi, India, and then down to Hyderabad. And from there, we drove to Sirsila in Telangana province, north of Hyderabad, and then to Warangal, which is where the conference was located. Now, did I do that? You did that. Okay. In Chicago, I arrived in O'Hare. Everything looked great. And I got there, and I found out, oh, my. Our plane that we're supposed to fly out of in 2 hours is still not here, and it's 10 hours away. And what happened, if you remember, there was a very significant military conflict between Pakistan and India. And they were saying, oh my, we hope we don't have World War III here, because these are two nuclear countries that are shooting each other, and Pakistan downed an Indian airplane, and then Pakistan closed their airspace, and so planes had to be rerouted, and it was a mess. So I found myself in the O'Hare Airport for quite some time, and they said, it's going to be 13 hours before you leave. So they gave us vouchers for a local hotel and for meals. And my wife had encouraged me that, you know, we have some close friends who are in Chicago, and she said, you need to call Haley and Eric and see about going to visit them. And so I did that, and I'll tell you about that in a second. But this is two Indians that I met. He is an engineer working for Whirlpool, and I'm not sure what her job is, but we all just met in line. And they helped me, and I tried to help them. And here we are where you can't tell it, except for the fact that they're both wearing clothes like sane people, and I'm wearing a short-sleeve fishing shirt. I'm going to southern India, right? I'm going to be inside the Chicago airport. I will not go outside, so there's no point in any long-sleeve shirts. So here I am standing for about 30 minutes waiting for the shuttle to come in 24-degree weather. It was peachy. No, it really wasn't as bad as it sounds. I'm not sure why. It might be because I was standing behind a bus and getting warmed by the exhaust. I'm not sure. But anyhow, so I called up Haley and Eric. Switch, go forward. And said, I've got vouchers for supper. Y'all want to come to my hotel and let's eat? And they have little Charlie, and they said, well, we really can't, but if you could come over here and bring supper, that'd be great. So I did that. And she indicated that it had been a difficult day, but I didn't really know the story. I got there and found out that on that morning, she and Eric received news that she had just suffered a miscarriage. And this was an opportunity for ministry that just amazed me, that God opened up that door to work with them. It was just humbling, is all I can say. We just had a really sweet time in the Lord and spoke with them of God's kindness and mercy and wisdom and talked about the Job series that I'm going through. I wrote Haley and I said, do you mind if I tell this story? And she said, absolutely, please do that. Go forward one more. This is what she wrote to me. We're all well because of God's abundant portions of grace. Please speak of God's faithfulness in detours and delays and even a miscarriage in hope that many will see and put their trust in Yahweh. Psalm 40, verse 3, what a wonderful psalm. When God moved and delivered the psalmist from his pit, he said, I have told the glad news of deliverance in the great congregation. I have not restrained my lips. I have spoken of your faithfulness and your salvation. I have not concealed your loyal love and your faithfulness from the great congregation. Your visit with us is still bearing fruit in so many ways. I marvel at God's perfectly timed delay. And what a gracious, gracious thing of the Lord. One of the things I said to them was that years ago when Lydia and I were going through some really deep waters with our son Jonathan, I felt like I had to be the strong one. And so, you know, Lydia would cry on my shoulders and stuff, but she couldn't see me be weak and she couldn't see me cry because she needed me to be strong. And somewhere along the way, I realized she actually needed me to lean on her some too. It validated her for me to lean on her and let her be strong for me. And I told them that. And about 3 days later, Haley wrote me and said, today was the first time Eric ever wept with me, and it was so sweet. So I thank the Lord for that wonderful ministry opportunity. We'll go forward. I'm finally made it after 30-something hours into the Hyderabad airport. Again, go forward, and I was met by Pastor Mark Hatfield and Pastor Johan Mamidi. Now, we have been calling him Johan Reddy for quite some time. His name is Johan Mamidi Reddy, Mamidi Reddy. But the reality is, Reddy is an upper caste name. India has a really deeply rooted caste system, and names mean something. And he is deliberately not using the Reddy name because he is trying to break those caste expectations as a believer and emphasize the fact that all are one in Christ Jesus. And I esteem my brother for that. Is it working? Okay, great. Can you help figure out how to get my notes back? My notes are still gone. Nope, can't help me there. Okay. I pushed something, and boy, I shouldn't have. Okay, that's all right. So anyway, so we met at the airport. I was supposed to get there at 7 o'clock on Friday evening. I arrived at 9:30 or so on Saturday morning, and they took me to the hotel and said, take a shower. You can lie down for about 15 minutes, and then we've got a meeting. And so from there, you told me that would advance. It did advance. It didn't advance for me. Okay, that's the deal. All right. Okay, well, you saw a picture of a church outside the front of Ecclesia Evangelical Fellowship, and here are the brothers that we met with. The first is an intern, and the second man on the left, his name is Pastor Stephen David. Stephen David is his name. I don't remember his last name. But Stephen David is a key person in India for Heart Cry Ministries. If you're familiar, Heart Cry Missions. If you're familiar with the name Paul Washer, Heart Cry is doing mission work all over the world, and they are reformed in their theology and they're doing a great work. They actually sent our former co-pastor Nick Alford to Nepal to engage in some pastoral training a little over a year ago, and they contacted the Reformed Baptist Seminary that we're one of the overseeing churches for and said, we have some work in Nepal that we want to do. Can you provide somebody to help us? And so Nick went last year. I'm scheduled to go in August of 2020. So we've got a connection with Heart Cry already. So they have a man, a brother that Nick met named Jeff Shaver. And Jeff's job is to work with nationals in these various countries through South Asia. Nepal, India, and several others, Thailand, and so forth. And what their strategy is they meet a man, they find a man, they vet him thoroughly, they get to know him really, really well. And then they let him vet the other men that they begin to network with. Because our experience last year showed, you meet a guy, he sounds really great. The reality is, he showed a whole lot more interest in taking us around to places that they wanted to build and how much money it was costing, and asking us to pray about getting that money. And it was quite troubling. And since then, I've been informed that they're probably really pretty deeply in the prosperity gospel as well. And so those are things we can't know coming from the outside. You need somebody who is in the country. And so you need a trusted man who is your point guy. And that is Stephen David. And he just commands a tremendous amount of respect among his brothers there in India, committed to the doctrines of grace. He's a good friend of Pastor Johan. And that was great too, because I said, well, Jeff, we're working with Johan Mamidi. Does your man know him? Yeah, he does. He commends him highly. And so that was a help as well. But these are all men that he works with. The man on the far right, his name is Charles. Pastor Charles this was a Saturday. The next day, he's a heart crime missionary, church planter. The next day was their first service for a new church that he was planting. And so that was an exciting time to be able to talk with him and to see what the Lord is doing for them. Okay, so that's the church where we were meeting with them, Ecclesia Evangelical Fellowship. And from our time there, we went out to lunch. And in India, of course, we went to a Chinese restaurant. So here we have Pastor Johan and his dear wife, Jasna Mamidi. Johan is 32 years old. He has been in the pastoral ministry about 10 years. He was converted actually in Bible school. His father was a pastor, but he was not converted in his home. He went to Bible school really to learn English more than to study for the ministry. But his first year, he came to faith in Christ, and the Lord began to give him a burning desire for the gospel ministry. And very soon, he went to a little town. And I sure wish I had my notes, because I'd love to tell you the names of those towns, but I don't have my notes, so I can't tell you the name. But he went to a little town, I think it was Villa Perret. Anyway, started a church, gathered a number of families, and was pastoring there. And in time, the Lord led him, in 2014, the Lord led him to go to Sursila. And so he passed off the church he was pastoring to a brother named Jivan, and we'll meet him in just a moment. And he moved to Sursila. He started the Agape Children's Home. He has 10 boys living with him and Jocelyn and in their home. And his father lives with them, and then and he carries out his ministry. These are some of the boys that live in, well, I'm going the wrong direction. There we go. Here we go. Some of the boys that live in Johan's house. They are sweet guys. We had a great time with them. I mentioned this morning that I had worked really, really hard to get their names, and I think I still have them. I think it's Diaker, Hanuk, Joshua, Kiran, Natin, Prim, Bhumesh. No, Ram and Bhumesh. Okay, going from left to right. Sweet guys. Most of them know a little bit of English. They're going to an English school, but some of them are 6 or 7, so they're just learning. Prim, the tall guy in the back, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about later. Very, very interesting story. This is Sunday morning at Sursila Community Church. I'm going to get this thing figured out, I promise. There we go. Sursila Community Church, where Johan is pastor. The first Sunday that we were there, Pastor Mark preached. He actually preached there and another church, and then I was taken away to preach in 2 other churches as well. After church, there's a time of fellowship with all the people, and Mark just mixes with people like you wouldn't believe. He mixes with people there like he does here. This young man, his name is Prim. His mother is Pastor Johan's sister. He lives with Johan and Jasna. His mother and father are together, and he has another brother. Prim is 14 years old, loves Christ with all his heart, really wants to pursue the gospel ministry. And so Johan said to his sister, would you allow Prim to come and live with us and be mentored by me in preparation for the gospel ministry? And she said, yes. And so now Prim lives in their home. He helps, he's leading devotions for all these other little boys. He is a right-hand man helping Johan with all sorts of things involved in the ministry. Just a really neat guy, 14 years old, and already has a real sense of what the Lord wants him to do. Here are some other young men that Mark had some time of fellowship with after the service. Guys just hanging out up there. The place where they meet is on the third floor of a man's home. It's wide open room for worship. And this man attends the church, and he charged them the exorbitant sum of $7 a month. And for that, they get use of the room anytime they want it. They have Bible studies there and all sorts of things going on all during the week. Now, Johann has he lives on the outskirts of Cercilla. This is right downtown in the middle of Cercilla, small village, but right in the middle. Johann is on the outskirts, and he has his home, which is good size, but very, very, very basic. And he has a second building, which is a church building. And you go in, and it's set up perfectly, and you got the ceiling fans, and you got the sound system wiring, and you've got the stage, and everything's there, and nobody meets there because they're on the outskirts of town. And his aim is to get fully established as a church and develop something of a reputation. They're in a very strong Hindu area, and so he has to be very careful. But in the providence of God, they're building a new road. It's a ring road, a beltway around the city, and it's going to run about 100 to 150 yards away from that new church building. So in time, they plan to move everything there, and it will be a really wonderful situation for them. The ladies stay inside and visit with one another, ladies and the girls, while the guys are outside. And here's Pastor Mark. After he finished preaching at Johann's church, he went to Pastor Jivan's church. This is the church where Johann had been pastor for a number of years before he moved to Cercilla. And Mark preached for them. And the way they have it set up, they have mats, and the women on one side and the men on the other, and the men don't want to sit on the floor. So they all sat in the back in chairs, and the ladies, they want to sit closer, so they sit on the floor. That's not the way they do it in every church, but that's how they did it there. But Mark, as I have said before, mixes with people like you wouldn't believe. It's a very interesting thing in Indian churches. After a service is over, particularly the older women come up to the preacher, whoever he is, be an American or an Indian, doesn't matter. Would you pray for me? I've got a head issue. I've got this issue. Would you pray for me? And they want the pastor to pray for him. And I talked to Johann about that, and I said, do they somehow think the pastor has more pull with God than another church member, another believer? And he said, some of the older ones do. He said, I'm trying to break through that and teach people that we all have equal access at the throne of grace. But some of the older people are steeped in their traditions, and then they still come to the pastor, and they want him to pray over them every week. And so we do that when we have opportunity. As I said, Mark worked with Johann that morning. I worked with a brother named Raju. Raju is an English teacher in a government-run school, committed believer. He is an excellent, excellent translator. So he drove me around. We probably drove for about 3 or 4 hours. We went to 2 different villages, preached in 2 different churches, and had some wonderful fellowship together. This is actually the church that we preached in. Here is his hometown, and this is his favorite hangout. And so the guy that runs it is like big buddies. They've been buddies forever. And so he wanted me to come and see his favorite hangout and, you know, have some dessert and just have a little time of fellowship together, and that was really fun. This is the church that we, first church that I spoke in, and it's in a very small town. And again, because I lost my notes, they were there, I promise. But the pastor's name is Mahesh, 31 years old. He wasn't there that Sunday. Where's your pastor? He's in Goa, 700 kilometers away. Okay, I didn't ask why. I'll tell you why in a little while. But here's this little church in this little town that has not one scrap, not one ounce of blacktop anywhere. It's just a very rural place. And we had to wait for the sheep to get out of the way so we could get out of the car and walk up to the church, the goats rather, excuse me. And it's just a different life. It's a different world. But the love of Christ is very real and very evident in these dear saints. So here's the goats. I keep forgetting that you and I, we're not synchronized. So this is an interesting thing. So from there, we went to another church. And when you're driving up to Grace, how do you judge how many people are here? You look at what? The parking lot. How many cars? In India, you look at how many shoes are outside the door. Because most of them don't have cars, and you don't wear shoes inside. Because the roads are so dusty that you take off your shoes outside, and then it keeps inside clean. And so I walked up and said, wow, that's a lot of people. And we had a wonderful time in this church. The pastor's name is Madhu. Madhu is 30, 8 years old. He was an eager student as a young man, fell in love with a young woman when he was 19 years old, thought they were going to get married, and she left him. And he was devastated, and he was depressed, and he wanted to kill himself. And during that period of his life, somebody shared the gospel with him, and he came to know Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, and had a craving for the Word. He read the Bible the first 6 months. He read through the entire Bible in 6 months, first when he was first converted, and just reads whatever you put in his hands. He's really, really wanted to get formal training, but there's never been the opportunity. There's never been the funds, the finances, the freedom to go do that. And so he was absolutely eating up everything that we said that week. But he is part of a little network that Pastor Johan has. I mentioned these names: Pastor Madhu, Pastor Mahesh, Pastor Jivan, Pastor Johan. These four men have been friends for a number of years. They get together once a month. They spend the morning fasting and praying and strategizing about the work that they're doing, about raising up men for the ministry, about planting churches, seeking the Lord in that. Then they eat and they have wonderful fellowship together every single month. They're very strategic in that. Now, one thing I love about this is Madhu's home. And the women and the men always sit separately, but the rooms are so small you can't have an aisle in the middle. So the women are in front and the men are back in the kitchen. Now, in India, there is not nearly the sense of equality between men and women that there is in America. And so I would have expected to see the women back in the kitchen. But in this church, the women were allowed to come up front, and the men were back in the kitchen, and that blessed my heart. After I preached, Pastor Madhu and his wife Tabitha came up, and they put this large yellow scarf over my shoulders. And Raju, my translator, told me what they were doing, and it was some kind of a thing of an honor. And I wish I'd asked him, would you just write the term so I can figure out what it is? Because it was a term I wasn't familiar with, and with the accent, I never could figure out exactly what they were doing. But it was a way to show their love and affection, their appreciation for me, having come and preached in their church. And so I had that opportunity. And that was a really sweet time. So when we finished that, went back to Pastor Johan's house, reunited with Mark. There's our brother Raju, and he left us from there. But Johan was not done with us. I told him, we're here to serve. And so he said, well, we've got two young men in the church who want to be baptized, and they want the American pastors to baptize them. And so we drove out to this river, and it was a large river, a big bridge that goes over it, and we saw some people standing around. He said, I think they're Hindu. You can't baptize anyone with the Hindus standing around because you'll get in trouble, and so will we. Johan could baptize them with the Hindus watching, but we couldn't. So he said, well, let's go find another place. And we walked around and wandered around and drove around for about 45 minutes, finally found this secluded little water hole, and we said, that's the place. And so here we are. This is a young man named Satith. He's been a believer for about 2 years, very, very zealous for the Lord. He actually leads singing in their church. The worship service that I was there, he was leading singing. But I had the privilege of baptizing him and in this watering hole, and then Pastor Mark baptized another young man. I told Mark, you always tell them to bend their knees, because if they don't bend their knees, they might fall over. Well, he forgot to tell a guy to bend his knees, and I almost had to go in after him. he just about lost him, but we got him, and he got fully wet, and it was a blessed time. I keep forgetting that you're not seeing what I'm seeing. Okay, and so there's the rescue operation for this young man who got baptized, and then there we are, all are together. It was a really sweet, sweet time. Now, here is Pastor Johan's wife, Josna, holding everyone's cell phones because we can't take our cell phones in, but everybody's got a cell phone. You know, they're ubiquitous. And so she was the holder of the cell phones, and of course, there on the left is Prim, the young man I told you about a few minutes ago. So before we came out of the water, we had a time of prayer together, and there we all are. That was our congregation for that Sunday afternoon baptism, the first Sunday that we were there. And here we are back with the boys. Mark was amazing with these kids. I mean, he's teaching them Chinese. They're teaching him Telugu. He said, let's have PE class. They had a day off the Monday that we were there, that we were getting ready to go to Warangal. they had a holiday. It was some Hindu holiday. And so they didn't go to school. So he said, we're going to have PE. So he has them in there stretching and doing all different kind of calisthenics. He goes outside and plays cricket with them. I have no idea what cricket is. I thought they were pests that you were supposed to spread. No, I'm kidding, John. I'm kidding. John Carrick was telling me this morning that India is the cricket capital of the world, so to speak. But anyhow, he just poured into those kids in wonderful, wonderful ways. It was just a real encouragement to see his heart for them. So we still weren't done. Johan said, oh, by the way, I've got a bunch of people coming over. We're having a worship service tonight. They all heard Mark this morning, but they didn't hear you. So you can preach the same thing you preached in those other churches. Okay, fine. So we did. And so I'm in Johan's living room, and he's translating for me. And this was amazing. Some of you have heard me make reference to a girl named Verlie Miller. Verlie was a high school friend of mine, helped lead me to Christ. And because her son was a student at Furman a few years ago, we reconnected. She and her husband, Marva, visited our church a few times. They streamed this on Facebook. And Verlie saw that and watched it and commented on my Facebook page about you know, preaching the gospel in India. And some of you, I think, did as well. But I just thought, how amazing is that of the Lord to allow those relationships and those contacts and for the word to go out. It was very encouraging. So this is Jyotsna in her kitchen. Her kitchen is very different from my kitchen. There's no cabinet doors. There's a few shelves. Almost all of the utensils are made out of stainless steel. They don't break. And there on the right side, the young man they're helping out, his name is Obed. Obed is 17 years old. He's one of the orphans that lives with them. He had polio as a boy, and so he has a difficulty on one leg. But he really, really helps take care of the family, take care of the kids, and he's just a sweet young man. And they've been great to him, and he's been great for them. So again, this is the kitchen. That's their stove. It's a propane burner. And no ovens, no sink like we would have, certainly no dishwasher. It's just very, very different. And that's typical of many of the homes that I have been in India. So why were we there? We were there to engage in pastoral training. Myself and Pastor Mark Hatfield, and we were at the Crest Retreat Center, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a bit. One of the things I was really excited about, last year when we taught, we had one group of about 30, another group of about 40 pastors, most from villages, very small churches, or very little education. Very, very few of them knew any English at all, and they didn't take a single note. They had no notes. They didn't write anything down. I can't imagine they could have remembered a 50th of what we told them. And part of me, you know, I hope they were encouraged while we were there, but how much did they take home? It just really weighed on us. Well, Johan said, we're not going to do that. Send me your outlines. So he translated our outlines into Telugu, put them in spiral-bound notebooks. And so each man had a notebook with the English and the Telugu there in front of him. And then as we taught, they were able to follow along and take that home, which is really, really important. The place that we were gathering was called Crest Center. That is Center for Renewal, Encouragement, and Spiritual Transformation. It's a Christian conference center that is really dedicated primarily for marriage enrichment for pastors and their wives. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about the gentleman who started that in a few minutes. But this is the building, the main building there over on the right, the conference center. They've planted groves. It was just built in 2012. This is all just getting going here. But they've planted some groves. They've got chickens. They've got other livestock, trying to be a self-sustaining village, as it were, in this compound. I told them that driving up, it's a walled compound with a building, you know, a square white building like that in India didn't look terribly different from a building in Pakistan in the city of Abbottabad where Osama bin Laden was hiding. But anyway, they all laughed when I told them that, reminded me of that. There's a couple of outbuildings. The small building in the middle was where we ate, and the other buildings where they cooked the food and where the staff stayed. And so Pastor Johan was our sole translator. I had 15 messages. Mark had 13. 28 messages over a course of a period of 3.5 days. Now, it's a lot to teach that many messages, but can you imagine 8 hours a day, you're listening for 30 seconds, you're processing what you hear, you're translating it, you're speaking, and you start over again, over and over. He was exhausted. Now, at one point, he called on another brother, a man named Benjamin. I'll show you Benjamin's picture in a few minutes. And Benjamin knows English reasonably well. He doesn't speak real well, but he understands reasonably well. And so, Benjamin, can you try to translate for this that Pastor Jamie's going to teach? And he said, sure. I was doing teaching on the Trinity, the doctrine of the Trinity. And it was not a whole minute, maybe a minute and a half into the lecture, Benjamin stops and he looks at me and says, this is too important. I don't want to do this poorly. And he turns to Johann and said, will you do this, please? And I just look at that. Here's this man standing up in front of all of his peers, standing up in front of this American pastor and saying, I don't have it, and I don't want to pretend that I do. And it was just such a humility that struck me, and such a taking seriously what we were there to do. And that made a huge impact on me. So here are the brothers, and you can see they're all very carefully following along in their notes, and they're taking notes and paying attention to what's being taught. You can tell that it's Pastor Mark teaching because I'm back in the back with my laptop getting ready for my next lecture. Mark taught on doctrine of Scripture. I taught on the doctrine of God, what we call theology proper. This was a wonderful opportunity. Some of the men there understand and love the doctrines of grace. Some had never heard. But we talked about the sovereignty of God. We talked about the decrees of God. We talked about election and predestination. We talked about, you know, the word I used this morning, that God is inscrutable. I have no idea how they would translate that into Telugu. But by the way, a translator needs to not only know both languages, he needs to know the vernacular, or excuse me, he needs to know the vocabulary. And thankfully, my translator has a Master's of Divinity and is committed to the 1689 Confession. So he was well-equipped, although he needed a few more guys that could do that too to help him. But there was we really were seeking to give these guys solid biblical truth. It's actually the same thing that I taught in a Sunday school class, if you were in my Doctrine of God Sunday school class last year. Something that I found out in talking with Jeff Shaver is that Paul Washer has written a workbook on the doctrine of God, Know the Living God. And it's 44 chapters. It's a workbook. And so it's, you know, questions and answers and fill in the blanks. And you look up Bible verses and passages. And it's really well done. 44 chapters, 288 pages. And it's been translated into Telugu. And they gave us a copy for every man. So we were able to give free of charge a copy of this workbook. So not only do they take home the lectures, but now they have assignments that go with the lectures that they can study on their own, and they can even use to teach other people in their ministries at home. That just absolutely thrills my heart, because the amount of really, really solid biblical material, training material in Telugu is quite limited. It's getting better, and we'll talk about that in a bit as well. But there's Mark signing the books for a couple of guys. I want to tell you about these four men. This is Pastor Johann's network, as it were. And I told him, by the time we come back next year, I expect you to have a name for your team, okay? Not just, this is Johann's team. But come up with a name, please. But on the left is Pastor Madhu. Remember, I preached in his home. That's the home with all the shoes. He is, as I said, he's 38 years old. He's the oldest of the men. But he was in a church situation. He was under a bishop, and it was, I think, a prosperity gospel church, and it was just kind of out there. And he came under he came by studying the word himself. He realized this is not what this group of churches is teaching is not faithful to the Bible. So he left, and he started the church that he's leading now in his own home. He has 23 families that are members. And about four years ago or so, he met Pastor Johann, and Johann has served as his mentor for the past several years. This dear brother who longs to get a thorough education, but he can't. And so he's just taking up everything he can get. And he was absolutely feasting as Mark and I taught. Of course, we've mentioned Pastor Johann Mamidi already. The third gentleman is Pastor Mahesh. He's the one I said I preached in his church, and they said, well, he's not here. He's in Goa, 700 kilometers away. Well, what's he doing there? I didn't ask. What he's doing there is his brother Sham was graduating from seminary. John MacArthur His church, Grace Church out in California, has a solid biblical seminary in Goa, which is about 700 kilometers away. Now, in India, different provinces have different languages. So in the Telangana province where we were, it's Telugu. In Goa, it's probably Hindi or something like that. But the training was all done in English. So as long as you know English, and a lot of the educated Indians do, you're fine. So his brother, Shyam, who is in the room, you'll see his picture in a moment, Shyam was graduating from seminary, and he was there to celebrate with him. And then Pastor Jivan, and I mentioned Jivan, Mark preached in his church the first week that he was there. I preached in his church the second week. And here we are with all of the men. That's the four brothers in the middle that are part of the network. On the left is Mukesh, and then on the right is Shyam. These men have both been to seminary. They are both young pastoral trainees, interns, as it were. Shyam just graduated. He's going to spend 6 weeks, 6 months, interning with Pastor Johan, and then they're going to send him out to plant a church. But Shyam, 24 years old, single guy, has been mentored with Pastor Johan since he was 12 years old. At 12, he said, "This guy is saying what I want to hear. I want to hitch my wagon to the gospel that's being done under this man's ministry." And his brother Mahesh has become the pastor of the church now, and Shyam is the servant spirit of this guy blows me away. I mean, here he is. He's just graduated from seminary. Okay. I'm a seminary grad. Most of these guys don't have much education. I do. He was the most humble servant spirit you could imagine. At one point, we were sitting in the dining area and just sitting and visiting, and a man comes up and starts talking, and Johan says, "Well, pull up a chair." Instantly, Shyam is there with a chair because he's standing in the background listening, waiting to see if there's anything we needed. Just absolutely blew me away. But that was par for the course for this young man. And I believe God's going to use him and Mukesh in some great ways. This is Shyam, and this is Mukesh. Dear brothers, I had the opportunity to meet with each of these men and get their testimony, get their story, and learn a little bit more about them. Mukesh lives in the same town with Shyam. They were buddies in high school. That's how he came to faith. That's how he came under the influence of Pastor Johan, and he's in Mahesh's church, and he helps out with that ministry. And then, of course, as I said, he went off to seminary and just recently finished. These are some of the brothers with Pastor Mark, with their new spiral books of notes and with their Know the Living God and some other books that Pastor Johan was able to make available as they are sharing this wonderful, valuable resource. This is a gentleman I want to talk about just a bit. His name is Francis Bergala. Francis grew up in Warrangal. He grew up in a Hindu family. He was converted through the ministry of India's version of Inter-Varsity Christian Fellowship. They call it evangelical something, I'm not sure, over in India. But he's converted to that ministry and went to seminary, got a bachelor's of theology in India, and then he worked for Inter-Varsity for 10 years over there. But after 10 years of working with Inter-Varsity, he said, "My life was out of balance, my family was out of balance, I burned out, and I just said, Lord, you've got to get me somewhere where I can recover." So he left India. He went to Talbot Theological Seminary in Southern California, where he pursued a master's of education, master of theology in education, and then a PhD in spiritual transformation and biblical counseling. And he is a gem. Francis pastored a Chinese church for 10 years in the LA area. There were two congregations, one English-speaking and one Chinese. So he did the English-speaking congregation, and there was a Chinese brother that preached to the Chinese. And that was his ministry, but his heart was in India. And he wanted to plant his life there. And so in 2010, he came back to India just part-time and bought this land where this Crest Retreat Center is. He purchased the land. He started doing some family enrichment seminars. He said he did about 6 of them just to see if there was an interest before they broke ground on anything. And he said people were eating up what he was doing. He was doing family marriage enrichment seminars for pastors and their wives. And Pastor Johan's been to a couple of them, and he said, "Nobody's doing this here. We're not hearing this stuff that we would be very familiar with. We still need to hear it too. We need to be reminded. But the biblical teaching on the family in India is so lacking. And he wants to focus on pastors' homes and marriages and get them really tuned into each other in powerful ways that they can take that back to their churches and translate that. So that's been his burden. They finished the Crest Center in 2013 and have been running, they run about, I think, 15 weeks a year of these pastors' conferences. About 100 pastors every year and their wives come. This is his wife, Sunita. She's a very gifted designer, interior design. So their home, which is on the same property, is beautiful. It's just right across the way. In fact, those pictures I took earlier, I showed you of the grounds, that was from the top of his house. And yet, in their home, here's their front door. It's very pretty. In the house, they don't have air conditioning. And there's a reason they don't have air conditioning. It's because the people who come to their conference center don't get air conditioning, so why should we? They got ceiling fans, we got ceiling fans. And yet, they recognize when these Americans who are spoiled rotten with air conditioning come to speak and they lay awake all night sweating, then they're really not very worth much to speak the next day. And so Johan insisted that we stay at a hotel 30 minutes away. So he drove 30 minutes to get us, 30 minutes back, 2 hours every day to get us back and forth to this hotel so we could have air conditioning, and then he translated for 8 hours. I mean, the guy just, man. But they're building upstairs in their house guest quarters that will have air conditioning. Not for them, but for those American guests who are so soft like me that we can't sleep when we sweat. And so next year, Lord willing, if we go, we won't have to drive half hour across town and stay in a hotel. We'll be right there, and we can just walk over and be with the men all the time. And the strategic thinking that I observed in these people's lives just so encouraged me. The way they order their lives around the kingdom is humbling and encouraging and challenging. Now, I want to tell a story before I go to that slide. His wife really is a wonderful hostess. And so the second day we're there, we come to lunch and there are grilled cheese sandwiches and drumsticks, chicken drumsticks that were kind of baked chicken. It was delicious. Now, everybody else has a plate of rice with other chicken and stuff, and they're stirring around and eating with their hands. And Mark and I had agreed ahead of time, we're going to eat with our hands like everybody else. When in India, do like the Indians. Well, they were very uncomfortable with the fact that we were eating with our hands because we're not used to that. I'm like, that's okay, In China, we eat with chopsticks. Well, the next day we get to, and they've got drumsticks and grilled cheese sandwiches. Where they got the cheese from, I don't know. But anyhow, and his wife, every time she comes to the U.S., comes home with a couple of big crates of Betty Crocker cake mix. So we had slices of vanilla cake at our table for dessert. And it's all waiting there for us when we come in, just covered up and everything. So that was just like blow me away. So the next day I'm teaching. Now you've heard me use my Romans 8:28 illustration, many of you, right? Okay. We like chocolate cake, but you talk about the various ingredients in chocolate cake, and a lot of them aren't very savory all by themselves. But when you mix it up, you cook it, it's delicious. And at that point I looked up and said, Francis, don't you tell your wife I said that. I don't want to see chocolate cake at lunch today. There's my chocolate cake. What are you going to do, tell them don't be hospitable, But they were just so wonderful and such an example of what hospitality ought to look like. This is Benjamin. This is the brother who said, this doctrine of the Trinity is too important. I don't want to do this poorly. And he went and sat down. When it was over, he came to me, and both Mark and I commented that he was just absolutely hanging on everything we said. He's asking insightful questions that sometimes were difficult. It was like, wow, you're really thinking through this, But afterwards, he came up to me and said, brother, would you mentor me from a distance? Now, he is in the network with Steve and David. That's a group they call TENTS, T-E-N-T-S, and I'm not real sure what that stands for. But he's in a network of guys, but he just said, something connected. I want you to mentor me. So pray that I'll be faithful, and I'm going to start sending him articles back and forth, and just, you know, read this and tell me what you think about it, and let's dialogue and see what the Lord does. But just a sweet, godly, humble man with great potential for the work of the kingdom. And there is Pastor Johan, still standing after all of the days. One of the things they did was very gracious and kind to me. I mentioned earlier that in India, the outside is very dusty, and so people take their shoes off before they go inside. After one day of standing on my bare feet on solid concrete, my feet were killing me. And Johan said, "Well, wear your shoes." And nobody cared, and I wore my shoes the whole time. And they were very kind. But by the last day, I was like, "Johan, please sit down." His leg was killing him. He would not do it. He would not do it. He stood the whole time that he taught. And just a real soldier. Here are the little guys, all in their uniforms, getting ready to go to school, lined up against the wall. Prem there has all the other guys ready. And they were just a real delight. This young man, Prem Sagar, S-A-G-A-R, not cigar, but anyway, Prem Sagar. This is his wife and his kids. He had come to visit Johan on that Sunday afternoon. He is a pastor. A church meets in his home. I think his brother actually is the pastor, but he works with him. But they meet in his home. And he came to visit and have some fellowship with us. He was also at the training. And then they got on their four-person motorcycle and went home, the 20 kilometers back to his home. I know it's 20 kilometers because I went there the next night. On Monday, after we finished all that we had done, I preached in Pastor Johan's church. I preached in Jivan's church, the churches that Mark had preached in. This was Pastor Jivan's church. And so I did a couple of my parables that I had preached here, and I really tried to focus on the concept of preaching the gospel to yourself every day. And they had never heard that term, and it was a new idea to them. And Jerry Bridges talks about that, that so many people think of the gospel as what you need to get saved, and then you move on to other stuff for Christian maturity. But in the book Discipline of Grace, Bridges talks about the fact that we need the gospel, and we need to understand all of its implications every single day. We need to preach the gospel to ourselves. And I talked about great hymns, like "Arise, My Soul, Arise," "Shake Off Your Guilty Fears." One of the things that's really wonderful about the age of technology that we live in, here I am in this little town, little village, way out in the middle of nowhere, and for $3 a month, Johan, on his smartphone, can pay for a hotspot, which means his phone effectively becomes a Wi-Fi device. So anywhere in India, I can get online. And so I'm standing there, and I'm going, "Johan, there's this hymn I want to pull the words up for so I can read them." He goes, "No problem." And we get on, and I read them, "Arise, My Soul, Arise." And I gave them to him ahead of time so he could actually translate it in his head and use that. But I was sharing that with the men as an example of how we preach the gospel to ourselves every day. And I made this application. I said, "Brothers, I've got friends in the U.S. who take old hymns." Matt Foreman's who I was thinking of. There are others who take old hymns that nobody sings anymore, and they put them to new tunes. And it's really wonderful. Now, I'm not suggesting that in India you take our hymns and you make them Indian. I would urge you to get a vision for writing good, solid, gospel-saturated hymns. And laid that before the men at the conference and talked about that in a couple other places. And that's one of the prayer requests that I'm going to leave with us when we're done, is that God would raise up some Keith and Kristen Getty-type hymn writers in southern India. Their music is so different from ours. The only instrument they use most of the time is a drum. Now, it's interesting. They usually, in Johan's church, they sing one English hymn. They sang "I Surrender All" the first week. And so the boys were singing "I Surrender All" in the afternoon and for several days afterwards. The following week, they asked me to lead in singing a Getty hymn. Liddy, do you remember what it was? Nope, forgot what it was. But it was a Getty hymn that we know. And it was interesting because the way they sing it is different. It's just the timing and some of the note progressions and stuff. And the young man who was going to play the piano for it came over to the house the day before, and so we're going to practice, and he starts playing. I'm like, "Brother, that's not really how we do it." And so I played it on YouTube a couple times for him and said, this is the way the writer is intended. He learned it our way, and that's how we sang it in church. And just accommodating and sweet and kind, and it was wonderful. The reason I have this picture, I was at Jeevan's church. As we drove up, I noticed a three-wheel motorcycle. And I thought, that's the only one of those I've ever seen in India. And then later on, while we were in the service, after the service over, I saw a young man walk up, and his legs were horribly deformed. I have no idea how he walked, but he did. And then he went outside, and he gets on his three-wheeler and drives home. And I was like, oh, how cool is that? There is adaptive equipment available in India on a limited basis. There was another young man I had the privilege of meeting. Come to pop. There we go. This brother's name is Pram, not Pram Sagar, that was the other guy. Pram something. Anyway, he's 40 years old. When he was 15, he contracted rheumatic fever and was left as a significantly contractured quadriplegic who loves Jesus, has a sweet countenance about him. He speaks English, so we were able to talk. There's a young girl who I had met through Johann's church the week before. She's 16 years old, who's quite fluent in English. And so Johann sat her down and said, now you translate for us. And she's like, what? He goes, go ahead. And it's really fun to watch him do this because he's very strategic. He gives people opportunities to serve in low-impact settings like that. And so she's sitting there interpreting for him and me so we can really make sure we communicate clearly. And his parents, who were Hindu until they came to faith in Christ, and they changed their names to John and Esther. Don't know what their Hindu names were, but here are these 70-year-old parents who are retired now, John and Esther, and their son. But so it was Sunday night, and Johann says, let's go visiting. And I said, okay. And he goes, you want to take the car or the motorcycle? I said, let's take the motorcycle. Sure. So I hop on the back of his motorcycle, and we're riding along, and we go to this house, and you know, we're winding through these little alleys and over this and under that and all the rest, get to there and have a great time of fellowship. We go and meet some of the other guys. Got to go see the young man that I baptized and his buddies from the hostel where they were living. And then we went back. Fun time. That was on Sunday night. Monday morning, we got up and we drove back to Pastor Mahesh's church where a number of pastors and other church leaders, including women, had gathered for me to teach. I had told Johann, I'm here to serve, put me to work. And he said, okay. And so he calls a special pastor's meeting on Monday and all these guys show up. And he said, but you can't use what you used at the conference because some of those will have been at the conference. So Saturday afternoon and Sunday afternoon, I'm feverishly writing two new messages for these guys. Colossians 1:28 and 29, Paul's philosophy of ministry. We proclaim Christ, admonishing every man and teaching every man that we might present every man complete in Christ. One of the things I shared with them, and this is something I shared with the others as well, is the fact that we must be prepared. We must walk into the pulpit ready to teach our people. And I read them a quote that I got from an Indian author. It was a Nine Marks article called The Pastor and His Preparation. I want to read you what he says. Perhaps the main reason for the weakness of the Indian church has been the severe lack of emphasis on faithful preaching and teaching. Most pulpits feature either watered-down topical preaching or preaching that gives people what their itching ears desire to hear. The result is theology devoid of the whole counsel of God and sheep who are easy prey for false teachers. The sad reality is a result of a lack of quality resources and training for indigenous pastors, and we're trying to address that in our small way, as well as decades worth of poor theology and ecclesiology imported to India by Western missionaries. Shame on us. And we're trying to address that too. So that's a burden that I have, is that the Lord would raise up more to pour into this land. And if you think about it, here's Pastor Mark and me working with this 35 men in a city of well over 1 billion people. It's like, well, while you're in India, it's like saying, while you're in the United States, except it's 4 times as many people. And so if the Lord wills, I would love to see me go at one point and Mark 6 months off twice a year, and I would be able to take another Reformed Baptist pastor with me, and Mark would as well. And we could double what we're doing if the Lord will allow. But I just want to say I'm so thankful to this church for giving me the time to do that and the resources to do that. So here is Mahesh on the left, their father who's a pastor, retired, and Sham on the right. Two brothers and a father committed to the ministry of the gospel. And this is Mahesh's church. There's a couple of shots. There I am trying to help them, instruct them. Ladies on the one side, again, the men on the other side. After we were finished, we went over to Mahesh's house for lunch. That is the biggest pot of rice I think I've ever seen. I promise it's bigger than what it looks like in that picture. I mean, it was humongous. And they have this huge shovel-looking thing that they pull it out and put it in another really big bowl. And everybody ate. It was wonderful. But they had something different for me because I'm an American. So the last night I was there, Johan had planned for me to speak one more time. He said, it's going to be a church service. Preach whatever you preach Sunday morning. You don't have to prepare something new. But we're going, but it's in Madhu's village, but it's a different, it's in, you remember the guy on the four people on the motorcycle, Pram Sagar? It's his home, his church. So I want you to go, we're going to do this. Great. So an hour and a half before we leave, Jocelyn comes walking out of the bedroom crying. She just found out that her uncle has passed away. It's her uncle that raised her. It was like a father to her. And he's now gone. And Johan has to take her to her family, which means he can't drive me to this village 20 kilometers away. No problem. I'm going to arrange for somebody to come get you. But I'm not sure he has a car. Well, you know, we went riding on the bike last night. I think we can do this. 20 kilometers in the dark, except for when the buses and the trucks, who never ever dim their lights, blind you. But it was one of the best roads in India that I had been on the whole time. It was a great road, 20 miles, kilometers riding down this road, and it was really wonderful. And about halfway there, I thought, I wouldn't ride down the street on my bicycle without a helmet. And here I am, tootling down at 50 kilometers an hour, no helmet. When in India, do like the Indians. So I'm there preaching to these dear saints, having a wonderful time with them. And there's my friend and translator Raju. This was his village. Reunited with him and Pram Sagar there on the right. We had had dinner together in their house. Again, this is the team. Hopefully I'll have a name for them by the time we go back next year. But several things I want us to pray about as we close. And I assured them that we pray for one mission concern every week, and we're going to add them to our rotation. But here are some things that I want us to pray. I want to pray that God would raise up gospel-oriented hymn writers to give them really strong, robust hymns in the Indian genre of music. I want to pray for the young men who are in the pipeline training for ministry, like Prem and others like him, who have counted the cost as boys and said, that's what I want to do. Pray for Sham and for Mukesh, who've just finished seminary and are launching out to engage in the gospel ministry. Pray for resources. One of the endeavors, one of the initiatives that Johan wants to begin, he wants to begin a bookstall where he gathers good, solid training materials in Telugu that he can make available at a very reasonable price, particularly to other pastors. We want to pray for these four men, Johan and Jivan and Madhu and Mahesh, those four in the middle. Pray for God to protect them, to bless their families, to bless their ministry. Pray for Johan and Jocelyn. They have not been able to have children. They discovered that she had some tubal blockages. And so a month before we got there, she went to Hyderabad and had laparoscopic surgery. And the doctor said, go home and get pregnant. And so they, you know, waited a couple of months. But pray that the Lord would bless her with a child. It means a lot in any culture. But in a Hindu culture, the fact they don't have children makes people suspicious and think, well, God must not be for them. And it hinders their credibility in ministry. Even though they're raising all these boys as adoptees, the fact that she's not been able to bear children is an actual hindrance to their testimony. So ask the Lord to bless them in that regard at all. She has a sweet spirit and has real joy, but I know it's a struggle that weighs on her heart. Well, that is my report. Thank you again for your encouragement, your support, your prayers. Thank you for allowing us to go. And pray that God would bless this endeavor for many, many years to come. Would you pray with me? Father, thank you so much for my dear brother, Pastor Johan, and his network of brothers who are committed to the work of the kingdom. For Madhu and Mahesh and Jivan and Sham and Mukesh, thank you for these dear men. Would you bless them with, even today, a sense of your favor, a gospel zeal, a kingdom ambition to see your church built, to see the gospel go forward, to see true and sound theology taught, to see it propagated among other pastors that they might teach the truth. Thank you for drawing so many of them out of false teachings like prosperity gospel and so many other things that would lead people astray, that want to tickle their itching ears. Father, thank you for the robust truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Help these men to be faithful to it. Help those to whom they minister to love the gospel and to make it plain and to see it powerfully bear much fruit in their land. We pray in Jesus' name.